Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gamers and scrubs, and all listeners, welcome back to the Shellavision podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Levan. This is episode 2. I'd like to do a huge shout out to the Cafe de Shell for providing us a location where we can record and for providing snacks for myself and our guests. Thank you a lot, guys. It means a lot. Today we have a very special guest on, programmer at Jundrew Games, Mr. Philip Tarpley.
Hello.
All right, so let's just get straight into it. What inspired you to start making games with Jundrew?
So Andrew is the guy who started Jundrew. We both grew up in a really small town called West Salem, and our older brothers were friends, so me and Andrew became friends. Both of our fathers were into technology stuff like computers, and me and Andrew were interested in that. We eventually fast forward a few years, and we were both like teaching ourselves programming in grade school and then throughout high school. And most of the things we did on computer was play games, you know, so we wanted to make games. And both went to college for that. Both, like, got careers right out of college doing, you know, both at Boeing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what got us full circle around here, starting to do gaming. Andrew started it, and then I noticed the success he was having, and I was like, hey, you know, need another guy? And he was like, sure, come on.
When did you get into that? How long ago?
Oh, man. When did I start at Jundrew? Well, I started, I think it was the beginning of 2015 or 14,
mm-hmm.
is when we started Simple Planes. We had a few ideas that we threw around. And we trashed those, and then we started on Simple Planes, and that actually stuck.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it started with a few games Andrew made. I think his first one I knew of that was popular, like Bridge Basher. They're all like physics based
mm-hmm.
stuff like that, where you build these bridges. It's 2D, and you put like weights on it, you know, and see how much it can hold, mm-hmm. things like that.
I don't know how much you know about this, but how does video game distribution work with a company like your guys is on like Steam or the App Store?
So Steam, you know, used to be, when it first started, it was like only available to like the big publishers and stuff, and nobody could get in. And then they opened it up a little bit with their green light process,
mm-hmm.
which I think developers could pay a small fee, set up a page, and, you know, the community would upvote it saying, hey, would you like to see this game on Steam? And it was a really opaque process. You never really knew how you were doing, if they were going to let you in. I think it was that way on purpose, because in the end, they wanted to just say whether they thought you should get in. And then they wanted to get away from that. And now it's like no holds barred. I think you still have to pay an upfront fee,
mm-hmm.
which I think they even get back. And then they just basically let anyone in, unless it's an obvious troll.
Mm-hmm.
I think was their wordage, actually. And it's similar, the App Store and Google Play, repay fee, and set up a page, you have to approve the page, and every time you submit a new version, though, they go through like some automated tests, and then some, I believe, to some extent, manual tests. So it's, the barrier's pretty low these days mm-hmm. to get something on any of the App Store.
Is Apple not as like hard as they like have been made out to be to get something on the App Store, or are they pretty easy to get something through?
I think as long as it's a serious attempt.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, if you put some effort into it and it doesn't look like you made it in one day, you know, I don't think most people would have anything to fear as long as, yeah, it's a serious attempt. They do have a longer process, whereas Google Play, Steam, it's instant now. Every mm-hmm. update, it's bam, it's there. Google Play is really quick. They do some automated testing, whereas Apple always takes a few days, and they'll kick it back for one reason or another more often than the other guys.
So is it hard to port something like that from, say, something on PC for Steam and something on mobile?
So a lot of that work is taken care of in the engine. We use Unity. So they do a lot of the heavy lifting, getting our basic code to work everywhere. But there's a lot of little things that people don't, like input devices is obviously a huge one. I mean, yes, our base game will compile and run, but if we don't take into consideration a touch-based UI, it'd mm-hmm. be really hard to use. And there are always little hardware differences that we have to deal with, as far as like the shaders that we write may not always work on these other platforms or something.
when you're making a game, you ship out the game, how much do you know to sell the game for?
Yeah, if you find out, I would love to know.
You just kind of guess?
It's a total... I mean, we, you know, look at the landscape of all the other games that we feel are, you know, of similar scope and quality, and we just kind of just go with a gut feeling. I mean, we talk about it, and then we just... It's something we'd love to have. We talk about it all the time, like Groundhog Days. I mean, I'd love to just put this out there for this much and see what happens, you know, this much. So, in the end, though, yeah, it's not a very advanced process.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I saw this on your Simple Rockets 2 page. Mm-hmm. You guys kind of provide a platform for players to share the things that they made within the game.
Mm-hmm.
So, why do you think it's important for companies to allow something like that to happen?
Well, for like Simple Rockets and Simple Planes, it's all about, the focus is on creating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start with the individual pieces and you create it and you have this vision of what you want. And so I think it's only natural when you get something and you're proud of it, you know, you're like, hey, I want to, you know, let other people check this out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a big part of the enjoyment, is not only sharing, but obviously having hundreds of thousands. I think there's hundreds of thousands of designs people have uploaded now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fun to share, and it's really fun to, you know, take other people's hard work and go and try it out too. So
yeah,
I think it just worked great.
You have that open platform, but then you see companies like Bethesda with their Creation Club,
mm-hmm.
where it's things that people made within the game, but they're things you have to pay for.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like everyone's entitled to, you know, ask for compensation for their work if that's what they want to do. I think aside from the fact that it costs money, which, you know, no one likes to pay for something, especially if they had got it free at one point in time. But it also, I think, changes your perception of how you judge that product.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you download a mod, you know someone's just doing this on their free time, and they're just doing it, you know, because they love sharing things.
Mm-hmm.
Then you let a lot of things slide, and not only do you let it slide to that person and not call them out, but you also, I think, end up enjoying it more because you're not as critical of it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it could definitely hurt people's just enjoyment overall, you know, not only because of the monetary, but because of...
Because when you're paying for it, you look at it more as almost DLC rather mm-hmm. than just as just someone made out of their passion. It almost seems like when it's not like it, but when you look at it, it's like, oh, this person's making it to make money, so you look at it differently.
Right, yeah. So I think the exact same product may give you less enjoyment because you pay for it, because mm-hmm. you're looking at all the flaws differently.
So, do you think that these paid mods are pretty much the new DLC? Do you think companies are going to cut back on actual DLC? For, well, I'm really talking about Bethesda in mm-hmm. specific, because they've released this with every new game that they've done. Do you think they're going to cut back on DLC to just let the community kind of make their content?
Right, and then they'll take a cut of that
mm-hmm.
portion. I really don't know. I'm sure it just depends on how much money they make, and if it makes money, they will... I'm sure they'll do whatever makes them the most money, but I could see that happening if it is successful enough.
Mm-hmm.
But
why do you think so many companies are turning towards microtransactions rather than a full-fledged game experience or just a game and then DLC? Why do you think there's so much more little things you can buy along the way than there have been in the past?
Well, because it makes money.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really it. I think I was looking up, and Activision Blizzard in 2007 made more money on microtransactions than they did from the original retail sale. So, clearly there's a big, significant incentive for them to do that.
So, say Jundru, worst case scenario, you guys start losing money. Would you ever think of raising the price of your games or adding something like microtransactions to maybe boost profit?
Believe me, that's something we talk about a lot, and we have not done microtransactions. We'd certainly raise the price if we thought that was, you know,
mm-hmm.
We wouldn't have any qualms about that if we thought it was necessary. And as far as microtransactions, I personally am not against them, like in, not just for our games, but like in other games, but certain types. Like I don't really like the feeling of them asking me for money if I feel like they obviously just turned off a feature to charge me for that feature, you know? Or I almost feel like it's like that YouTube red. Like every time I push that thing or YouTube in the background, it's like, hey, do you want to hear this in the background? I know, I have a feeling that probably is something that didn't cost them a lot to develop that, and they just know that people want it. But so I don't I don't know if we would do microtransactions. It'd have to make sense. And until now, nothing. We've not seen anything compelling enough. We don't want our players to have buyer's remorse and thinking they got duped into getting some cheesy DLC.
I think that's a big problem now. It's just, I think Fortnite does a good job where you pay this one-time thing, you get it for about a month. It adds new things to the games, it adds new challenges. But then when you have something like Activision, I know they sell skins for Call of Duty a lot, then that's, I feel like it's not the same kind of reward, and it's pretty much the same price that you're paying for it.
Right. Yeah, and then on the flip side, there's games like Candy Crush, or I actually don't even play that, so I don't know, but games that allow you to buy the same thing over and over again. You know, that's, in my mind, that's really unfulfilling. I pay money to get an extra life. You know, it's not even anything permanent I get to keep. It's expendable in the game. So that's at the one end of the spectrum as far as things I don't really like.
In microtransactions, you have loot boxes. In your opinion, are loot boxes gambling?
That's a good question, I think. I really don't know. I guess I'd have to just do like the so-called sniff test. And it seems like gambling. You know, it feels like gambling. I don't know if legally it passes all the check boxes, but feels pretty gambly when it's, you know, you just hit a button and you hear all the sights and sounds of a casino sometimes, and, you know, you either win or you didn't.
I think that it's okay in some cases because, I mean, adults can gamble, but I think the problem comes when you have kids playing your game. Call of Duty, I know a lot of kids play Call of Duty, and you have loot boxes in it, and that might be considered gambling, and that's illegal to let kids gamble, so.
Yeah, and I feel like if you have a person who could have an issue with, like, gambling predisposition for gambling addiction or something, I feel like they would have the same problem with those types of systems, so I feel like there's just a lot of similarities.
Yeah, you see that a lot with companies, especially mobile games. They're not making most of their profit off their average player. They're making it off of this small group of people that are spending thousands and thousands of dollars on their games, and I think that's an issue.
Right, that's what I've heard is, a lot of them, they'll make hardly anything, and then the so-called whales who will spend, I mean, almost unbelievable sums of money on these games.
But then you have kids who become these whales because they don't really understand that they're spending real-world money when they are playing these games.
Yeah, it's hard to tell what type of impact that would have on a kid, you know, developing. So
overall, do you think microtransactions like skins and different challenges like that, do you think they're worth it? In your opinion, do you feel satisfaction when you would maybe pay a certain sum of money for a different item in a game?
A fleeting moment of satisfaction, I would say. You know, I've not really gotten into that. I've played games that had that stuff. I just haven't bought it. So I would say for myself, no. I don't really see the benefit. But
would you rather a game company take a longer time to release a game and then cut out those kind of microtransactions and maybe raise the price of their game so they could have a bigger profit margin?
I would. And as a developer, I would too, because that's the type of game I would rather make, you know, and say, hey, this is our game. This is how much it costs. Probably you'll even get free updates because that's just how we do, you know. And instead of having, you know, trying to lure them in with a low barrier to entry and then, you know, have them put all these restrictions that, you know, makes them want to pay and end up maybe semi-resenting us and the game. You know, we like to have a really good relationship with our players and we don't want to make them think we're out to get them or anything. So I would rather see the prices raised than keep tipping in that direction more and more towards free versus, you know, gobs and gobs of DLC, but everyone's different. Not everyone wants to do that. A lot of people love this system where I can test it out for free, you know, and then start throwing change in their way.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about how these AAA games really aren't making enough money for the $60 price point. You see these companies that release these like specialized DLC packs before the game's even released as like a pre-order bonus, and usually ends up to be about $80. Do you think games should just be flat out $80, you get all of that stuff?
You know, I don't know. Because I think, you know, if you look, you know, back, like I was born in 80. I was like, so like in 85 when I started gaming, we've had over 100% inflation, you know. So $50 game then, which is what a lot of games were, you know, be well over $100 now. And obviously, the retail price of games have not kept up with that. And the cost of games, especially for these big publishers, is increased, you know, beyond inflation. So that's why they've compensated with DLC, I'm guessing. I don't know what the market would think if they just all of a sudden, you know, increase their price to $90. I don't see that happening, especially now that all these Netflix-style game consumption things. You know, Xbox is doing it.
Yeah, the Game Pass.
Game Pass mm-hmm. and PlayStation Now. Mm-hmm. So I don't see that happening personally, but I don't know.
Yeah, I think the big thing's going to be the games as a service kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
Where it may be free to play, and you, say like Fortnite, you buy a Battle Pass every month. Or you pay $10 a month, you get access to games like the Game Pass. I know Microsoft is now turning to what PlayStation's been doing for a while, where it's all game streaming. You don't have to download the game. It streams from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be kind of the next biggest thing that we see.
Yeah. We had dabbled in, I don't know if you ever heard of it. Amazon had some program called Amazon Underground, which was for Prime members, allowed them access to a certain amount of games. So that was kind of dipping their toe in that for mobile games.
Doesn't Twitch have something like that? They like Twitch Prime, where you pay a subscription. Well, I know Twitch is owned by Amazon, but...
Okay.
So I think that's kind of what that morphed into.
I know that streaming stuff wouldn't have been too long ago, or I would have thought the performance of that would have been too poor.
You know,
the lag and latency. And I don't know about over the internet, but I tried that Steam Box, which was amazing. I couldn't believe how well it worked.
Yeah. I have one of those little Steam Boxes in my living room, and then I stream it from my PC that's in my room. It's way better than you'd expect it
shocked.
To be.
Yeah. I was shocked how well it worked, honestly. But yeah, so, you know, sounds like it. Maybe the future.
What do you think your guys' next big project is going to be?
We really don't know. We just, we're still in early access for Simple Rockets 2 on mm-hmm. Steam. We're still releasing updates for Simple Planes, and beyond that, I mean, of course, we toss ideas around between each other and stuff, but we really don't know. it'll probably be something that we think that the same type of people that like Simple Planes and Simple Rockets probably that you know that they would probably like the new game. I'm sure that'll be a big part of our decision. But.
Well, that's about all we have to talk about today.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me. It's been really good.
Yeah, it's been fun.
This is the Shell-O-Vision Podcast, Episode 2, signing off.